Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Think about the food you buy and eat on any given day. Do you know what's in the packaging your food came in? And do you know what chemicals your food may have come across as it made its way to your plate? U.S. food safety regulations allow more than 10,000 chemicals to be added to food and materials that come in contact with food. These include artificial food colors that may exacerbate attention deficit or hyperactivity disorder symptoms, nitrates primarily fed to animals that can interfere with thyroid hormone production, and chemicals used in plastics and grease-proof paper food packaging. Today's guest, Dr. Maricel Maffini, says the FDA's scientific decision-making process is inadequate to effectively assess and manage the safety of all of these chemicals. In a study she co-authored, she writes, quote, "This challenge has become particularly evident in the face of mounting scientific evidence that some of these chemicals, including endocrine disrupting agents, can interact with biological systems at exceedingly low chronic levels of exposure and result in adverse health impacts, especially when exposures occur during pregnancy or early childhood," end quote. Joining us to talk more about this is Dr. Maricel Maffini, a scientist and independent consultant. She has more than 20 years of research experience in the fields of carcinogenesis, reproductive biology, and endocrine disruption. For the last 8 years, she has studied the FDA's regulation of food additives and the science used to determine whether chemicals in food are safe for human consumption. And Dr. Maricel Maffini joins me from NPR in Washington, D.C. Hi, Dr. Maffini. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Rose. It's good to be with you.
Great to have you. The American Academy of Pediatrics has used Dr. Maffini's research and recently issued guidelines advocating policy changes to the FDA's food safety regulation process. The pediatricians group is encouraging families to reduce the amount of chemicals their children are exposed to. Rachel Schaefer is one of the co-authors of the recent Food Additives Policy Statement and Technical Report published on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Rachel is currently a PhD student in environmental toxicology at the University of Washington, Seattle School of Public Health, and she joins us on the line from Seattle, Washington. Hi, Rachel. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Well, Dr. Maffini, let's start off with you. U.S. food safety regulations allow more than 10,000 chemicals to be added to food and food contact materials, and these are commonly known as food additives. 10,000 chemicals, that's a lot to process. First off, explain to us, how is it that so many chemicals are allowed to be added to food and food packaging?
Well, you have to keep in mind that the law that was passed that created the program to regulate food additives under the authority of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, passed in 1958. So we are talking about 60 years of additives that had been approved in many cases by FDA, but also in many cases by food companies that they can... They are allowed to basically determine that a chemical is safe for a specific use, and they don't have the obligation to tell the FDA about the chemical and where it is used, how much it is used. So in 60 years, the estimation we have is of more than 10,000 chemicals. Probably more than 1,000 are not known to the FDA or the public. That is an estimation that we made based on industry information, and those are the chemicals that the report from the American Academy of Pediatrics put under the label of generally recognized as safe. So these are chemicals that, again, companies decided the use was safe, they didn't inform FDA, and FDA did not review and didn't provide an opinion on whether or not they agreed with the company's determination that the chemical was safe.
So out of 10,000 chemicals, you're saying that 1,000 are not known to the FDA or the public?
At least 1,000, yes.
At least 1,000. So as a scientist, are you able to get your hands on this information? I mean, what do we do with that information?
Well, we did some research a couple of years ago, and we identified more than 200 of those. So these are chemicals that are, the use is unknown. The chemical may be known, but the uses are not known, and the safe use is not known. It's basically how much we can consume. We figured that out going to food industry annual meetings through advertisement in trade journals. So it was a long research trying to figure out these things, and then we contacted out the companies that were advertising these chemicals, and there they confirmed that, first of all, some of them didn't want to talk with us, but they basically are confirming that they decided those uses are safe, and they didn't tell anybody. Many of those are extracts, purified extracts from plants. Some of them are used in the dietary supplement industry, and they are making their way now into the food supply.
And we'll talk more specifics. We'll talk about more specifics later in the show. But Rachel, I also wanted to bring you in here. Since this law passed in 1958, the American diet has drastically changed since then. I mean, the food that we eat, the packaging that we come into contact with on a regular basis has drastically changed. I mean, I'm just thinking about how my grandparents lived well into their 90s and didn't really think about a lot of these things. They didn't really have access to so much of the food that we eat now. They ate what they ate, you know, they ate the same for decades. So can you just talk briefly about really how our diet has changed since then?
Yeah, I think that we're seeing a proliferation of processed and packaged foods. We're an on-the-go society, and it's really convenient to buy food in that way, but as you say, it's very different from how our generations previously ate. And so because of that, we're being exposed to chemicals that are being added through the processing and packaging process that our relatives were not exposed to. And so that's what we're concerned about, is that with these shifting dietary patterns, we're getting our food oftentimes wrapped in plastic or heated in plastic, and then we're concerned about what exposures are coming from that.
And just remind us, what does the government do or not do when it comes to these chemicals? Again, Congress gave the United States Food and Drug Administration the authority to ensure the safety of chemicals in food. So here we are in 2018, we're exposed to something like 10,000 chemicals in food. What does the FDA do, and what does it not do to ensure the safety of those chemicals?
So Maricel gave a good overview of that, but we're particularly concerned because while there are 10,000 chemicals that are added to food, over 1,000 have not been properly reviewed for safety because they are approved through this generally recognized as safe or GRAS process. This was originally put in place for additives such as oil or vinegar, where we do have a general sense that those are safe and they can be added to the food supply without all the resources needed for intensive review. But we've seen that this designation has been overextended to, like she said, approximately 1,000 chemicals that perhaps need an in-depth review. And so we're seeing this is a concerning loophole to us. And while we would like to think that the FDA is able to ensure the safety, the Government Accountability Office actually reviewed this very issue and said that they the FDA was not able to ensure the safety of food additives through this process. So this definitely deserves attention.
Maricel, what is the FDA's reasoning for not testing these 1,000 chemicals for safety?
Well, they are using that exemption in the law. It is the responsibility of the company that produces and put the additives in the food supply to say that the chemicals are safe. So a chemical cannot be put in the food supply if there is no previous affirmation of its safety. So in regular terms, a chemical that is going to be in food is considered guilty until you show that it's innocent. So you have to show that the uses are safe. So if a company does it and doesn't inform FDA, or if it sends it to the FDA for its review and approval, in both cases, they have to show that the uses are safe. And it's not FDA's responsibility to test. The tests and everything that comes into the decision that the use is safe is responsibility of the company. I have to say that when FDA receives a notification or an application for a new chemical to be used in food, and FDA looks at it, the scientists ask very good questions. They have a great group of scientists. They ask very tough questions, but the problem is that if they are going through this GRAS system, the company can, if the company doesn't like the questions that FDA is asking, the company can ask the FDA to stop the review. They will withdraw the application and they will continue marketing the chemical. So if FDA asks too many tough questions, they will not get as many applications as they would like to, because they really want to know what goes into the food supply. But at the same time, when they are asking those questions, then the company said, well, thank you, but no thank you. We will continue our own way. And they have their own toxicologists, their own professionals, or they hire external professionals that they will look at the data and said, yes, in our view, this use is safe and it goes into the category of generally recognized as safe. And one more thing that I want to say, of those 10,000 chemicals, the great majority were approved in the early years. So there are tons of chemicals that were approved at once, like thousands of them, for instance, in just one rule in the 60s and in the 70s and 80s. After the mid-90s, the great majority go through this process called GRAS.
And GRAS, again, is the generally recognized as safe list. Maricel, you brought up a number of points there. If we have to rely on a company to say whether or not its use of a chemical and their product is safe, I'm thinking of some small companies. Let's say they're out of the Bay Area, they're organic, they're in your backyard, they have, 50 employees, and it's a well-known brand, it's a trusted brand. You might trust them to be honest about this, to comply. But these multinationals that maybe are in another state, multi-billion dollar company, maybe they've got a bad past, and you don't trust them. I mean, what is a citizen to do if it's up to the company to say whether or not the chemical is safe?
Well, I think, first of all, if the consumer has a problem with a particular chemical, they should contact the companies and ask, do you have a safety report? How did you determine that this use is safe? You can call the FDA and ask the same question. In general, I would say the big companies have a well-oiled system to approve these chemicals, and in general, because they're international, they go through the FDA process in general. So some of the small companies, because there is a cost associated with having consultants to look at your data and then submit it to the FDA and all the back and forth, the small companies sometimes don't have the resources to pay for that, and they make a decision on their own or with a small group of consultants or scientists that they know that that particular use of a chemical is safe and not going through the whole application with the FDA because the resources are more limited. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure it's a matter of big company versus small company what is more or less safe, but it is certain that in many cases the main issue is the conflict of interest because whomever is making the decision is profiting from the selling of these particular chemicals.
Rachel, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate that last point about conflict of interest, which is we're really concerned about that if the designation is made by the company or an external consultant that they've hired, that's a clear conflict of interest that shouldn't be used to make a decision about safety.
Rachel Schaefer is one of the co-authors of the recent Food Additives Policy Statement and Technical Report published on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She is a PhD student in environmental toxicology at the University of Washington, Seattle School of Public Health. The American Academy of Pediatrics recently issued guidelines advocating policy changes to the FDA's food safety regulation process. The group is encouraging families to reduce the amount of chemicals their children are exposed to, and we'll talk about tips on today's show. We're also joined by Dr. Maricel Maffini, a scientist and independent consultant. She has more than 20 years of research experience in the fields of reproductive biology, endocrine disruption, and carcinogenesis. And today on Your Call, it's our One Planet series, and we are talking about chemicals and food and how that affects our health. U.S. food safety regulations allow more than 10,000 chemicals to be added to food and packaging that come in contact with food, and 1,000 chemicals are not known to the FDA or the public. If you have any questions or comments for our guests about the chemicals in your food and safety, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Rachel, the new guidelines from the American Academy of Pediatrics encourages families to reduce the amount of chemicals that children are exposed to. What are your main concerns for children specifically?
We're particularly concerned about children because, in general, they eat and drink more relative to their body weight compared to adults, so they're exposed more highly to these chemicals. They're also undergoing critical developmental processes in their bodies that are often relying on specific hormonal signals at specific times. And if those processes are disrupted by these external chemicals, that could have lifelong consequences. And the third reason is that their defense systems that could help them handle these chemical exposures are also still developing. So they're more vulnerable in that way as well.
So let's talk a little bit just about what kids are exposed to. I mean, so many kids, a lot of this stuff is in single packages. So you'll get the sippy cups, the, maybe the baby food that's in those new plastic little bags with the plastic top on it. There's just so much now. The packaging industry and the food industry wants to, quote, make it easier for parents. So they package everything from crackers to carrots to little things of peanut butter to hummus. So kids are now even exposed to more packaging. Can you talk more about that, Rachel?
Yeah, I think as we talked earlier in the show, it's very convenient to have all this food packaged and ready to go, but it's very different than what we ate and what other families ate 50, 100 years ago. We're concerned about some chemicals in plastic products. For example, phthalates. These are plasticizer chemicals that are used to make plastics flexible, but they've been linked to male reproductive problems that affect male reproductive development, for example. So that's one key example of a chemical that we're concerned about in plastic packaging.
And Maricel, what would you add? What are you concerned about specifically when you look at children and what they're exposed to?
I agree with what Rachel said. I think there are developmental processes that once they are disrupted, they cannot be corrected. The Endocrine Society has a nice phrase that is that development is a one-way street. You cannot take a U-turn and go back and fix what happened. So one of the main concerns that I have is the development of the brain. It's an organ that is not completely developed when we are born, and it continues developing for years and decades. And the brain the development of the brain can be impaired in many different ways, and it started even in the womb. And one of the chemicals that the Academy highlights that I am quite concerned about is called perchlorate. Perchlorate is better known as the rocket fuel chemical. It's the fireworks chemical. But the FDA approved it to be added to any plastic in contact with food that is dry, like cereals and other sugar or flour. They approved it in 2005. And they said companies can add 12,000 parts per million of perchlorate to plastic. And the in FDA's own data shows that children, infants, and toddlers, the exposure to perchlorate has increased since they approved the use in plastics. So up to 34% in the infants and 23% in toddlers in a span of roughly like 5 to 8 years. So kids are eating more perchlorate in the diet than before. Mm. And perchlorate interferes with the thyroid, and low thyroid hormones interferes with the development of the brain. So this is particularly of concern for pregnant women, but also for young children.
And before we go to break, Maricel, what tips would you give people to avoid perchlorate? I mean, this is just one of so many chemicals. But since you're concerned about this one and we're talking about it now, what can people do to try to avoid that one?
It is a very tough question because it not only comes from some plastic, but also can be found in water because it's a part of degradation of bleach. So you can find high levels of perchlorate in green leafy vegetables, like the FDA did when they tested it, to rice cereal or oats cereal, all the way to bologna and salami.
Wow.
So we cannot buy our way out of this. Of the great majority of these chemicals, we cannot buy our way out. Something has to be done at the regulatory level.
Well, and we'll continue talking about that after a break. I mean, who makes these chemicals? We have to follow the money because the chemical industry lobbies heavily in Washington. Just a number of chemical industry executives are working with the Trump administration. They have already scored so many victories at the EPA. Dr. Maricel Maffini is a scientist and independent consultant. She's got more than 20 years of research experience. We're also joined by Rachel Schaefer, one of the co-authors of the recent Food Additives Policy Statement and Technical Report published on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation about the very damning and detailed grand jury report that was released last Tuesday. It found that bishops and leaders of the Roman Catholic Church in Pennsylvania covered up the sexual abuse of more than 1,000 children by more than 300 priests. It's a very disturbing and detailed report. We will talk about what it will take to hold perpetrators accountable, ensure justice for victims, and prevent future abuse. That is tomorrow. And then we are also putting shows together about a new book by Beth Macy called Dope Sick, dealers, doctors, and the drug company that addicted America. If you have a show idea, a guest idea, or general feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Your call at kalw.org. Today, we are talking about chemicals in foods. There are 10,000 chemicals in our foods, and 1,000 of those chemicals are not known to the FDA or the public. And we're talking specifically about packaged food, but as we're learning, even though you might not eat packaged foods, a lot of these chemicals are in the water that we drink and even on our vegetables. We're talking about this today with Dr. Maricel Maffini, a scientist and independent consultant. She's got more than 20 years of experience in the fields of reproductive biology, endocrine disruption, and carcinogenesis. For the last 8 years, Dr. Maffini has studied the FDA's regulation of food additives and the science used to determine whether chemicals in food are safe for human consumption. We are also joined today by Rachel Schaefer, one of the co-authors of the recent Food Additives Policy Statement and Technical Report published on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics. We've got a number of callers on the line. Let's hear from Lauren in San Francisco. Hi, Lauren. Welcome to the show. Hi. Do we have Lauren? Okay, you can give us a call back. Sorry about that, Lauren. Let's go to Herman in San Francisco. Hi, Herman.
Good morning. I just want to ask, with the chemicals that are in the drug, have they been tested against medications that are now being prescribed to so many Americans? You know, there's just such a vast number of 10,000 chemicals. I mean, some of these drugs that are being prescribed today were not around in the 60s. So how could they possibly be tested against them?
Well, that is a great question, especially at a time when people are taking such a wide variety of prescription drugs. Dr. Maffini, what about that question?
It is my understanding that the additives have not been tested in combination with prescription drugs. For instance, the additives that were approved in the 60s have not been reviewed for safety themselves. So we have 40, 50 years of research advances in knowledge of how the body works, how children grow, how adults get older, and how the bodies respond to all those changes. And none of those chemicals have been, that were approved decades ago, were reviewed again to see whether or not they are still safe with the knowledge that we have. So there is no obligation to test the additives in combination with other chemicals like prescription drugs. However, if an additive has an effect on a particular organ that is also a target for a drug, I think doctors should be aware of that, and there should be probably better communications between physicians and within the FDA Office of Drugs and the FDA Office of Food Additives to figure things out for the betterment of the public.
Wow. Rachel, what would you add? Because we've done a lot of shows about how children are now prescribed drugs for things like ADD, ADHD. What about the mixture of the drugs for children and the food they're eating and the plastic they're coming in contact with?
Yeah, I think this is a really important shortcoming. But I also want to point out that not only do we not know about the interactions between food additives and drug chemicals, but we don't even fully understand the effects of combinations of the different food additives that are being added to our food. So there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of toxicity testing that needs to be done to better understand how combinations and mixtures that we're all exposed to could be affecting our health.
I mean, we've done shows about how in medical school, doctors don't really take that many classes about nutrition. It's pretty rare for a doctor to even ask you, what do you eat? What's your diet like, right? So what is a citizen to do if they're concerned about this and they have to take prescription drugs? Let's say a drug makes them feel better for any number of reasons, whether it's diabetes or heart disease or what have you. What if they're just not feeling right and they wonder why? I mean, it's really difficult to find answers.
Yeah, it can be frustrating. I think we're really hoping that this statement, along with just growing awareness in the general population, people will be able to ask their doctors these questions, and doctors will start to look into this more and help find information and press for change so that more information is available to the public in a transparent way.
And as Maricel said, for something like a perchlorate, it's hard to avoid it because it's in our water, it's in our leafy green vegetables. But the list that you all put out from the American Academy of Pediatrics, you have things like, and I'm just taking this from your report and the New York Times, prioritize the consumption of fresh or frozen fruits and vegetables whenever possible. Avoid processed meats, especially if you're pregnant. Avoid microwaving food or beverages in plastic containers. Do not put plastic food containers in the dishwasher. Use alternatives to plastic like glass or stainless steel whenever possible. Always wash hands before you handle food and drinks. Always wash your fruits and veggies. What else would you add to that list?
I think these are all really good suggestions, and we want to give people tangible actions they can take when they read this, because it is frightening to think about everything that we're exposed to. But I want to bring it out to the bigger picture. Like Maricel said, we can't necessarily shop or buy our way out of this, and you can do a lot of things to control your diet, but it's really hard to put the burden on the individual, which is why the American Academy of Pediatrics put out this policy statement. We're really calling for a change in policy and regulations so that it's not up to the individual to make all these decisions and choices and try to navigate the system. We think that the policy should ensure that all food additives are safe before they're used in our food products.
Right. And that's, we have that conversation a lot because we're expected to have little mini FDA departments in our homes where we have to do a ton of research. And then industry in the meantime is lobbying Congress. And under the Trump administration, we did a show about this in June after heavy lobbying by the chemical industry. I'm reading from the New York Times here. It's the Trump administration is scaling back the way the federal government determines health and safety risks associated with the most dangerous chemicals on the market. So at a time when industry is getting pretty much what it wants from this administration, and it gets a lot from Democrats too, citizens really have no choice but to do a lot of their research on their own.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, though. I study this as my full-time job, and it's even overwhelming for me. So it's challenging to think about putting that burden on other people. This is really too much to expect from a family, especially if you're a young parent trying to think about all the different ways to keep your child healthy. It's really important that citizens speak up and pediatricians. We wrote this on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Clinicians can speak up and make a difference by advocating for policy changes here.
Well, thank you for the call, Herman. It's such an important question, and we'll continue to address that one. Let's go next to Lauren in San Francisco. Hi, Lauren. Lauren, are you there? Lauren was on mute. If you can unmute your phone, Lauren, we cannot hear you. Lauren? All right, let's go to Marie-Louise in Palo Alto. Hi, Marie-Louise. Welcome to the show.
Morning. Yes, what I would like to mention is plastic wrap. And I remember first seeing it and how people often would cover a bowl with some warm food and then put plastic wrap on top of that and, wrapping foods in it, etc. But I also would like to mention the thing of cheese wrapped in plastic. And I think it's still done the way it used to be, which is with a machine that produces heat to seal the plastic around the cheese. And I think that's especially bad for both the taste of the cheese as well as safety. So I wanted to mention those things.
Okay, thank you, Marie-Louise. Maricel, do you want to take the first one? What about people who wrap their food in plastic and then maybe microwave it the next day?
Yeah, if you can avoid that, it would be great. It's minimizing the contact of food, mm-hmm. especially hot food with plastic, is always a good idea. I do want to mention something in addition to what Rachel said. Moms and dads don't have to go to the supermarket and look at what is on the aisles and decide which of the foods is safe for them. All the food must be safe. That is the obligation of the federal government, that every food in the that is out for sale must be safe. They have way too many other more important things to be concerned about. And we can do research, but that is not, again, our job. If you have questions about a particular food that you feed your kid or your favorite brand, call the companies. Call them and ask them what they are doing. How do they know? Why are they using the ingredients that you're concerned about? Which kind of packaging they are using? That type of, I think, action is going to be quite productive. We have seen that we have had some success with that, where companies are being pressed more and more, and people are calling them. They can also call the FDA. The FDA has the responsibility to provide answers to the actions they take and those that they don't take.
And Rachel said that the Academy of Pediatrics is calling for policy changes. Maricel, what kind of policy changes would you like to see?
I think one of the important issues that is part of the law and that has not been, as far as I know, ever put into action is this issue of the combination of chemicals in the diet and how that is affecting the long-term health of the individuals. I mean, FDA has the mandate from Congress to do that and look at how different chemicals in the diet are affecting a particular organ function or development or things of that sort. I think if we look at chemicals as a class, not one chemical at the time, we will go much farther along in understanding the potential health consequences of chemicals. I think the other point that the Academy makes, and I agree, is to close this grass loophole. This is something that has been abused for many, many decades now, and it should be dealt with. It's not a great idea that companies are making decisions on their own. They are exposing the whole population in many cases, or vulnerable populations, and then there is a potential health crisis, and we don't know what's going on. The FDA doesn't know what's going on. And then the other one is FDA should have the ability to collect data. They don't know. Of those 10,000 additives, those are those in the books. But nobody knows how many they are actually in use, how much of them they are used, in which foods, how much in each food. So we are not really knowing what we are exposed to as a population. You know, when we are talking about safety, we always focus on something that is toxic. But safety is a combination of whether or not a chemical is toxic, but also how much we are exposed to it. So something may not be that toxic, but if we are eating way too much of what we are supposed to, well, that's a problem too. Mm. And there is no way to know that information. And FDA doesn't have it.
Maricel, the other issue here is that there's a revolving door between the FDA and the chemical industry. And I'm looking right now at the Center for Responsive Politics and the list of chemical companies that lobby Washington. I mean, it's 3 pages long. The American Chemistry Council, you've got Bayer, 3M, Dow Chemical. I mean, all of these companies lobby Congress. So that's the other issue here, is how do you take on big money in politics and lobbying?
I would love to have the answer to that question.
Yes, I know. We ask it all the time. You know, yeah.
I think from my experience with the scientists at FDA, they are focused on the science and whether or not there is sufficient evidence to declare that something is safe. Mm. what I would like to see is that they modernize the science they use to make those decisions, because that is one of the problems that is also highlighted in the Academy report, that the science they are using is not really up to par with what we know about how the body works and the problems that an interference in some normal development can then cause and the consequences of that interference later in life.
Let me read you a response to the American Academy of Pediatrics policy statement. This is by FDA spokeswoman Megan McSaveni, and she told the New York Times, quote, "If new information, such as published studies and adverse event reports, suggests that a substance already in use may be unsafe, or if consumption levels have changed in ways that could affect safety, the FDA can conduct further studies to review whether the use can still be considered safe," end quote. Maricel, what are your thoughts on that response?
Well, I would like to know how FDA knows the consumption, because there is no database that I am aware of that has that information, how much people are consuming, unless they're working with the CDC and trying to figure those things out. When it comes to reports, it's not that simple. FDA has known for many, many, many years that one of those fluorinated chemicals, and now have been in the news for contamination of water and other things. They have approved those chemicals to be in contact with food in your pizza boxes or carry out containers, things like that. They had known for many years that they were unsafe for human consumption, and the agency didn't do anything. It took a group of us to submit a petition to the FDA with legal and scientific rationale asking the agency to ban the use of those chemicals. It took the agency 1 year, and they responded and they agreed with our petition. And some classes of these fluorinated chemicals, like PFOA, are now banned for human consumption because they are unsafe. So it is rare that FDA makes a decision on its own. They have done it with trans fats, for instance. They have just banned, not just a few years ago, they started the process to ban the use of artificial trans fats in foods because they are associated with cardiovascular diseases. But that is the only decision I can think of that it was FDA's decision to go that route. Mm.
And Rachel, what are your thoughts on the FDA's response?
Yeah, I think I agree with what Maricel said. Also, she said that they can take action to review, but I'm not sure how often that would actually happen. Just concerned about whether they're actually taking initiative. But I think the primary question is whether they have that information at all that would allow them to take action. That's our concern, that they're not getting the type of information that would allow them to make those decisions and take further review.
Companies are not required to submit that type of information to the agency as they are to EPA, for instance.
Hmm.
FDA has to reach out to companies if they hear something or they saw something and try to get that information from them.
Oh. Well, let's go to a few more callers. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. I guess your guests would agree with me. This is a public health issue. Clearly, the FDA has dropped the ball in looking into this. But I'm more concerned about a couple of other things, and that is, one, what's the state of California doing? We know that they have the Prop 65, but that's only a warning for chemicals. And my feeling is you can't avoid this. I mean, no matter how hard you try, you're going to be exposed to chemicals. I just choose one example. I shop when I can at the farmer's market in Palo Alto and buy produce, which is relatively inexpensive by comparison. But I just take pasture-raised and organic meats that's packaged in plastic, and plastic is ubiquitous even at the farmers' markets. So, I mean, I don't even know if growing your own food organically would somehow safeguard you. So I guess I'm concerned about what can the people in the state of California do to push the state to try and take this on as a public health issue. And instead of allowing commercials on TV for medications, they'd be warning people about the safety or unsafety of the chemicals and their exposure to packaged foods, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, thank you, Greg. I'm not sure either of you can speak specifically about California, but what can citizens do to pressure their state governments? You know, at a time, I mean, the Trump administration is not going to do anything about this. The chemical industry has already scored many points. So, Rachel, what can citizens do to maybe pressure their state officials and then maybe their senators if they might be friendly to an issue like this?
Yeah, I think sharing the information from this report, raising awareness, and then understanding where your state might have authority or pressure points to do something on a state basis. But again, this is, we're talking about a national issue, national regulations, and a lot of our food is, you know, based on national or international patterns. So I think it's difficult to do something on a state level, though California may be in a unique position. To your other point about the farmers market, I think that would be an interesting conversation to have with the growers who are providing the food and the meat, you know, whether they can find alternatives to plastic. I think in general, stores and companies, especially at the local level, would be responsive to feedback from consumers if they knew that there was concern. And so I encourage you to speak to the families and the growers who are at the farmers market as a start.
Do you know, Rachel, are compostable bags any better than plastic bags when it comes to chemicals?
They should be if they're compostable, bio-based, potentially made from plant-based materials instead of petroleum-based plastics. They should be safer, though I can't say for certain because there's such variability across the market and what these labels really mean, but I would imagine that the compostable bags would be safer.
Dr. Maffini, do you know?
I believe so. However, when it comes to single-serving materials and that are supposedly for compostable, there has been a huge problem because they are coated with these fluorinated chemicals that they're also called forever chemicals for the reason that they don't break down, that they don't go away.
Wow.
So they are coating these compostable materials with the fluorinated chemicals, and then now you have contaminated compost with huge amounts of these PFAS that you hear and read now that are contaminating so many water supplies and now soil and compost. So you have to really start asking a lot of questions as a consumer.
A lot of questions.
And when it comes to the state levels, I think for Greg, you can start looking at or ask questions about whether California law mirrors completely FDA's. It is my understanding that there may be an opening in California because it seems that they don't have the grass exemption in the California food law.
And since Greg brought up the farmers market, we have a question from Doris in Berkeley who says, can we assume that when we buy organic produce that it is indeed as labeled and free of toxic chemicals? Does anyone ever randomly test organic produce to confirm that it's actually chemical free? Dr. Maffini?
What she should be sure about is that there are no pesticides. When it comes to other chemicals, organics are not they're not better than conventional foods when it comes from, for instance, lead contamination or arsenic contamination. So when it comes to chemicals, as far as I know, there are very few chemicals that cannot be used in contact with organic foods. But the reason it's organic is because the way they're grown that doesn't allow the use of most pesticides. That's what you're protected about, not from toxic chemicals.
Mm. Well, we have about a minute left. Rachel, what kind of response are you getting from pediatricians to this report?
There's a lot of interest from pediatricians, and we hope that this can stimulate more conversations with their patients and help them take a broader view. Like you mentioned, there's little discussion about diet when you go to the doctor, and so we're hoping that this can open up more for pediatricians to talk about what people are consuming, general environmental health issues related to their diet and other life exposures. So I think we're optimistic that because of this interest that pediatricians will begin to incorporate this advice, families will be more aware, and then pediatricians can also advocate for change.
Rachel Schaefer is one of the co-authors of the recent Food Additives Policy Statement and Report published on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Rachel, thanks for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Mari Salmafini is a scientist who, for the last 8 years, has studied the FDA's regulation of food additives and the science used to determine whether chemicals in food are safe for human consumption. There are 10,000 chemicals in our foods, and as Dr. Mafini says, 1,000 are not known to the FDA or the public. Dr. Mafini, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And we will definitely continue to follow this issue. You might find some interesting stories at yourcallradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation about the damning and detailed grand jury report released last Tuesday. It found that bishops and leaders of the Roman Catholic Church in Pennsylvania covered up the sexual abuse of more than 1,000 children by more than 300 priests over the course of 70 years. What will it take to hold perpetrators accountable, ensure justice for victims, and prevent future abuse? Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Laura Flynn for producing today's show, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.